Good evening. It is Tuesday, November 5th, 2019. We are at the Authority Headquarters, and I will call to order the PC, Pacific City Joint Water Sanitary Authority Board of Directors Business Meeting, and it is 5 o'clock. I don't think I said that. I'll call the roll. Cameron Gogas.
Here.
Sean Carlton.
Here.
Ann Price.
Here.
For the record, Tom Donahue is not with us. Item 3A, the meeting minutes of the October 1st, 2019 business meeting. Any comments or corrections?
Hearing none, I'll move that we approve the October 1st, 2019 business meeting minutes.
I'll second.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the business meeting minutes from October 1st, 2019. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Item 4A, accounts payable for October 1st, October 15th, and October 31st of 2019. Any questions about the payables? No, no, no.
I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for October 1st, October 15th, and October 31st, 2019.
I'll second.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the accounts payable for October 1st, October 15th, and October 31st of 2019. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Item 4B, fiscal year report. Any questions for the authority manager?
Don't have any.
Cameron? Okay, no. Thank you. No questions. We'll move on. Item 5, the manager's report. Sorry.
Oh, a couple of items here. Item number 3. As you may recall, we've had issues in the past trying to get backup pumps for some of our smaller sewage lift stations. Working with one of the distributors of the manufacturer, what we have now, and although the models have changed somewhat, these are still kind of plug and play pumps. Right now we have no backup pumps at all. So I am looking at getting 3 to 4 pumps ordered. So we've got redundancy, and some of these I'm going to try to ensure that they'll work at more than one, just one lift station. So I haven't ordered them yet because I still need to go over some things with the distributor, but I'm estimating the cost is going to be about $22,000, and that would come from the 004 fund.
And that's all part of the stuff that we're upgrading and moving up, and the compatibility of the pumps. And
these are basically the same flow rate, same head, same everything is what we've got there.
So
Most of those, the only lift station that I'm looking at possibly going with a larger pump is Beachy Bridge, because that's got such a shallow wet well. So that's one thing I'm considering there.
And that wouldn't be a problem to beef up the pump in that?
We just have to change out some electrical.
Oh.
Yep. And then the other item is item number 4. I believe Rochelle spoke to the board last month regarding the Orwarn program, and I sent everybody a copy of what their agreement is. This is basically the emergency response plan for utilities all over the state of Oregon and getting emergency help in from other locales, districts, cities, what have you. And it's actually been something that's been on my mind for several years, and it just kind of came to a head where I thought, you know, we should probably go ahead and look seriously at this and join if we need emergency services related to either our water or wastewater systems. So.
And it puts us in, as a member of it, it puts
correct.
Us in the team to respond to help other
right.
authorities.
Right, and it's not a mandatory.
Right.
You know, if somebody calls on us and they need help,
we have the right to decline if it's not
exactly
a good time or
exactly
for us to do it. So, yeah, I the mutual aid agreement that you sent us is, as you would expect, extremely thorough.
How much does it, is it to belong to the, or?
It doesn't cost us anything.
Does it? No. I think it'd be beneficial. If anything, help us or help somebody else, or if we have it, we don't, we do, we don't.
I think their documentation is very clearly put together, and I like the part about it that, you know, it states who would be in charge of the responding person, the issue about equipment and how that gets resolved, the issue of insurance, and it just lays that out. You can also look at their operational plan and their bylaws on their website, and that all those supporting documents give me additional confidence that this has been carefully and wisely laid out. I also noticed, I think Portland has got it on the ballot today. They have, because of the way their city charter is written, in order for them to belong, they have to go through a vote. So it's not just the small guys and the big guys, it's everybody combining together. And it's not just an Oregon system.
It's nationwide.
And it feeds into incident management techniques and FEMA criteria and so forth. So it's a very coordinated effort, and I would agree.
Yeah, and Rochelle's actually going to a training class in Eugene. She'll be leaving tomorrow and coming back on Thursday. They're doing a mutual aid exercise, so it'll be a good.
Oh, she'll get the whole mock-up.
Right, exactly.
Forms and.
It is. It was interesting when I was on the fire department and when we did that. It's just how interagencies exchange and how it's all formulated, and it's run so smoothly that it's not, you know, it's not right. Everybody's chasing their tails.
Right. And it has to have that structure, or
very much so.
There's a breakdown.
Yeah.
So do we need a motion to approve?
Yeah, because their signature is required, and this is an agreement. It does need to be approved by the board of directors.
Okay. Well, I make a motion that we go along with, have this in our policy and procedures of the mutual aid agreement. I'd have to read the mutual aid and assistance agreement for the provision of emergency service related to the water and sewer wastewater utilities.
You got it.
Got it.
Something like that.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded that PCJWSA, through an agreement, joined O.R. Warren through the Mutual Aid and Assistance Agreement for the Provision of Emergency Services Related to Water and Wastewater Utilities. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take care of this later.
Okay.
That's all I have in the manager's report, unless there's any questions.
No questions, but I do want to add a comment. As I was reading through some of the SDAO's information, I came across the 2019 report card for Oregon's infrastructure. And Oregon got an overall C-. And in the area of drinking water, it was a C-. And in the area of wastewater, it was a D. And that is graded on capacity, condition, funding, future need, operation and maintenance, public safety, resilience and innovation. The interesting part of it is when the gentleman that from Oregon that gave his lecture on the 2017 report said that the biggest holes in wastewater and drinking water were infrastructure and operations and maintenance. And I think that this item regarding the pumps shows that we are moving definitely out of that category, if we were ever in that category, because of how we choose to upgrade our infrastructure and how we choose to deal with operations and maintenance, because we're paying a lot of attention to that, and a lot of utilities are not.
How did they derive to the, is it of the state of Oregon, that this is the whole, and this is where the whole...
I'm going to send you to their report. It's the American Society of Civil Engineering full report.
I mean, did they contact us or talk?
No.
No.
Is this stuff that they get from DEQ?
I have a feeling that it's probably, because it's an engineering report, it's probably based on a lot of the professional engineers within the state who are doing work for municipalities and special districts and whatnot, and kind of an overall what they are seeing out there with, you know, their clients or, you know, maybe a future client.
So you could have like a little here that's bad and it kind of spreads, or, you know, the pockets.
I think it gets weighted too.
I'm not exactly sure how they do that. So.
But even though with those grades, I think when I think about PCJWSA and I think of Horn Creek and I think of our wastewater treatment improvement and I think about how long our service trucks stay in service, you know, it's like you said at the last meeting, we've got a great crew and they're doing some really good things. So I appreciate that Tony's talking to the board about those pumps and getting them in stock so that we have those resources available.
Is there like an excess? Is there like an, I mean, as far as backup stuff, I mean, do we have quite a bit or not? I mean, it would be
as
really
far as
pumps
what?
Or whatever, you know, for emergency. I mean, it would be so cost prohibitive to have everything on hand, emergency wise.
You can't have everything on hand. Let's take airport lift station, for instance. If airport lift station goes down, we have provisions that we built into that project where we get a pump over here and we hook it into the wet well and into the discharge. And that's our response to that. In the meantime, we're on the phone calling people to help us, you know, vac trucks and whatever we can get, our tanker truck until that pump arrives. It would be really nice to have a pump here for that, but that's about an $80,000, $90,000 pump.
Kind of cost prohibitive.
But along those lines is that I'm kind of getting into unfinished business, but one of the things looking at going forward is that we have built into the infrastructure with the new upgrade here. In the event that the flow equalization basin pumps completely die, we have a bypass system in place. The only thing we don't have is the $80,000 or $90,000 pump to go with that, because when we were in the design process and doing the review of the dollars, that's one of those items I had to cut. But it looks like now I'm going to be able to get it back in.
But could the pump also be utilized in another area, or just one single?
That's what I'm looking at doing. If we're going to spend that much money, I'd want it available for other
dual use.
Right.
Okay. Well, sorry, I stepped into.
Okay. Item 6A, wastewater treatment improvement.
Okay, so I know I've been saying this for a few months, but we are getting pretty close to having all the details worked out with McClure & Sons Incorporated, looking at the budget and looking at bid alternatives, and talking with rural development about some things. I'm hoping that the change orders that we have to execute with MSI will be quickly approved by rural development, and we can proceed with the bid alternatives, which is a new disc filter, the completion of the reuse water system, and hopefully get this pump into that, as I just discussed. We do not have the money to build a new shop. It would put us over budget unless we kicked in out of our pockets about $220,000, and it's just not worth it at this point in time. I think going forward that the authority can go out to bid and have a shop built a heck of a lot cheaper than what would be required under the prevailing wage and the way it was designed and everything else. I think a shop is needed, but I think at the cost, it's not. We don't have the money, number one. And number two, I don't think it's worth the cost.
How big a shop are you?
I think it's 40 by 60. It's adding on to the other shop that we have, the West shop out there.
Okay. Tony, I assume that will you need the board's approval when the agreement with MSI is reached, or are you able to?
It's going to be your signature and my signature on it. The board's already authorized us to act on that stuff. Once it's all done, I will forward that information to all of you so you know what's going on.
Okay.
And right now, because the negotiations are confidential, I don't want to discuss it publicly.
Exactly. Anything else?
That's all I had under that. Okay.
Item 6B, community engagement, our website update.
So Michelle has been doing a lot of research and really getting this going, so it's going to be a lot more intuitive and easier to use for our customers. And she kind of outlined what the mock-up different pages are going to be. And since she's been working on this, you've got a bunch of questions. I don't have the answers to them. She does. I mean, at this point in time, I think the critical thing is whether or not the board thinks that we're moving in the right direction so we can keep moving forward and get all these things integrated into the website.
Yeah, when I talked with her about what it was she was actually looking for from us, basically she was saying that she really kind of wants the broad view. I mean, is this looking kind of like what you had in mind? And then we get into the nitty-gritty details of how things flow and what goes where,
and
the pictures are and all that sort of thing. But that's not the level that she's looking for at this point. If we like what we see here, then she just wants to know that.
There was one mock-up before the one that you guys have that we just rejected. We didn't like it at all. It was this one, all three of us in the office like the way that they put this together.
It'd be interesting to see how, you know, to pay your bill online, how that'll be more effective instead of calling through and, you know, if you want to talk to
somebody. You can do that now.
Yeah.
And I don't see that changing a whole lot other than the look of the pages where you go to do that.
It kind of maybe stands out more or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's the same functionality. My initial reaction was the structure of it's good. It's easier to get to a button to push.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll go the next level of how it actually works and what relates to what and what's under what topic.
Actually, user-friendly.
Would be similar to what we have now, really.
And you can see
it's just the look is different.
There will be an app for mobile as well. So,
right, yeah.
Which should be a lot easier for people.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it on her list, but I want to make sure. I know that it was pretty important to Tom that we had an option for people to opt in, self-opt in and out to a mailing list where you could self-subscribe and self-unsubscribe.
Where you could get alerts.
Alerts.
But well, this has the ticker.
I don't know about that.
The we had ticker talked about. On it.
The news and notice ticker.
Right.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't automatically go out. Somebody would have to check that if they thought there was a problem. And I think his interest was in having a option to subscribe, unsubscribe, and then whatever was placed on the news and notice would automatically go out to push out to that list, and then we wouldn't be updating it or anything.
Yeah.
So maybe
we can mention that to her.
Yeah.
But I really like personally the admin and financial section where we're able to access documents online, and that they're all ordered the same way, and I think that'll help my brain function better.
Mm-hmm. And the request for information tab, that will be where people could do public records requests and that kind of stuff.
So would that be in the resource links?
It's a request for one.
It's one of the pages. It's one of the buttons.
Okay.
I think it's fine. I think it looks good. Yeah.
Full steam ahead.
Full steam ahead.
Well, we'll move forward then.
All right, item 6C, new authority manager search update.
So we have a late application that came in yesterday, and I have a copy of that. So we have three applications right now. I believe that we're going to be meeting an executive session later to go over that information. So I guess that's about all I have to say about that right now.
So we're in round two, the three applications, and Bill has McDonald from Prothman has conducted his preliminary interviews, so we're set to move forward. Item 6D, and that'd be the master plan scope update, master plan's proposal scope update.
Update proposal, yeah, however you want to call it.
Well, it's the scope of work.
It's the scope of work that we're looking at.
It's the scope of work.
Yeah, and I want to make sure that we're clear here that this is not a master plan update. This is a new set of master plans, a full set.
Correct.
And sometimes our terminology, we all know what we're talking about, but that's...
And we have a scope of work, but it got updated.
Yes.
So this is the updated scope of work.
Yes. So, Tony, you want to introduce us to what we've got in front of us?
I don't know. What do you want me to say? It is.
It is what it is.
It is a brand new master plan. Regardless of if the board decides they don't want to do it right now, then in 2023, the drinking water program is going to require the authority to do one anyway. I think the scope, especially for just having completed or almost complete the wastewater treatment plant, is pretty necessary to see where we're going to be at for SDCs on water and what is recommended by the professionals that will be going through that. Doesn't mean that the board has to necessarily adhere to that, but I think it will give some more information to the board. I think we're kind of at a point where the master plans that we have, I think, probably need to be reordered and reprioritize some things and look at some different options of different things. And there's also the requirement that seismic assessments be done now, which has not been previously required. That particular effort's about $55,000. We're also looking, we've discussed before, about modeling of the wastewater collection system. That effort's about $61,000 to do that. It is not a requirement. I want to make sure that that's clear. It is not a requirement that we do that. However, it is my opinion going forward for this authority that with the properties that are still available for development, I think this authority needs to know exactly what and what cannot be done in certain areas of the collection system. If a developer comes to us, let's just take the Meyerstein property, for
example.
Exactly.
We know
nothing basically empirical about what the collection system will handle receiving sewage from that development, which is 50 acres. And then there's also the Kane property right next door, which is another 33 acres. We have no idea what kind of impact it will place on the collection system. So this modeling takes about 9 months to complete because they're actually taking samples and doing flow monitoring throughout the entire distribution or the entire collection system. So they're able to put together a model to see what areas may be able to receive what kind of flow. And in the process of that, we're looking at trying to go with a different modeling system and incorporate that into the water distribution system as well. So the entire effort is $278,000. As I noted, that if you take out the seismic and the collection system portion of it. The total cost is $161,857. The previous phases that we did cost us $150,797. So that basic effort, we're $11,000 over what we were last time. So I guess that's it.
How often are we required by law to do a master plan?
With the drinking water program, they want a new one every 20 years. And they've already told us that 2023, we're going to have to do one. DEQ, to my knowledge right now, is not requiring it in a particular timeline. But it only makes logical sense to do both of them at the same time, at least to me.
And so if we do this master plan now, that resets the 20-year.
Correct.
And it takes, I mean, we're in 2019, and it takes...
9 months?
Well, the flow testing is 9 months, right. But the entire project could be...
It could be a year to year and a half.
Year and a half, yeah.
Which means it may be 2021 before we have it, which is only 2 years earlier than we're required to have it.
Right. And now that we've made this major investment in this wastewater treatment plant, now's the time to... to get that figured in, I think.
Well, and I think at this point, too, that entered into the calculation, the scope, and I could be wrong, is that since Parametrics worked with us not only on the master plans, but on the scope for Horn Creek and the scope for the wastewater treatment plant, that those have been recent enough that they're in their heads.
Or
in their minds already,
that data
is still pretty
still
fresh,
pretty current.
That we might get more mileage for our buck at this point.
Well, how many other large areas do we have that would be, I mean, you're talking 50 and 30 acres, as far as in our
well, for our instance, utility. There's a parcel here on Cape Kiwanda Drive by the community center.
Right.
I don't know how many acres that is, but that's a... you know, an area that has to be looked at. There's the parcels that are at the end of Pacific on either side, where there, of course, has been talk in the past about putting hotel, motel, restaurants in there.
And then the Weierstein and the Kane property.
Right.
And was Aspen clear up on top of the PC Heights?
Oh, right.
The east of Sea Lodge.
And Aspen Pacific years ago applied, but I don't recall if Aspen Pacific Development was in our boundary or not.
That's a Meyerstein property.
That's the Meyerstein. Okay, it was the company.
They are in our boundary.
Okay. Yeah, I know the Meyerstein is, and I think of it that way instead of...
Yep.
But Aspen Pacific was a company that bought or was going to develop it.
Exactly.
So that's why it's...
I'm trying to visualize where...
Right.
If you go up to the very, very
right,
top of Summit...
Yeah.
And you just go straight
right,
to
the
gate
stuff that
there?
Butts up against Kello's property, all that.
Yes.
On both sides.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
one side is the Kane property, and the other
right.
side is the right. Meyerstein development.
And they're both several acres. I don't know how many.
Well, one's...
I mean, they're
the
big.
Kane, the Kane is 33 acres, and Meyerstein's is 50 acres.
50,
on
okay.
Side.
So...
And our sewer water was right up there to the top as it comes over the hump there to hit Summit? Or...
Well, we have sewer that goes up on Summit and past Lomar, and then there's another stretch on the other side. And Lomar sewer actually comes down from the middle of Summit and goes down to Topping and then over to Elderberry.
On the other side. On the
correct.
North side.
I think it's important for the community to know if what our modeling looks like so that we know what we can do and what we can't do when somebody comes along and we've got the data to support it.
How would that look? Somebody comes in, just for instance.
Sure.
You know, we're within our parameters of our now, and they wanted to do this. Are we behind the eight ball as far as them coming in and, okay, I want to develop this 30 acres now? And does our master plan cover it, or we're kind of...
That's one of the things that the new master plan needs to look at.
I mean, but right now, we're not there then.
Not 100%, no.
And if there were questions specifically, we would try to get them answered, not only with Tony's expertise, but also engineering, but it would be an individual cost that didn't give us the whole picture.
Right.
And it might not be right for the whole system. So getting this in place,
get it right,
would give us at least the baseline. Yeah.
So when Aspen Pacific gave us, they actually had a proposed development.
They did.
But I don't know that they got to the stage of talking details with us. Did they? I wasn't involved in that.
No, it was just cursory types of things. There was nothing specific that we got into.
Yeah.
When they kind of pulled out, we were kind of at the stage of how are they going to be sewered and how are they going to be getting drinking water.
Mm-hmm. And they were having access discussions.
And they were having access discussions.
And then they gave up the whole plan.
Exactly.
Or set it aside.
Right.
We won't say that they gave it up.
Now, where's that property?
That's the Meyerstein property.
Oh,
it's
oh,
one
okay.
of those big parcels up on top of the hill.
Okay. Where they did some of
that
clearing.
They wanted secondary access
the
from
the project
Resort
Drive. Was...
Oh, from Kellows. That's what they were doing up there. Okay, got you. Oh, man.
I think this is... I feel like this is pretty necessary because one of these days, those developments are going to go.
So you'd like to see the modeling included?
I'd like to see
the
full scope be done now. That plus the fact that if we put it off, it's just going to cost more later on. So.
A couple of general comments. One, I would like some time to just really get into the nitty-gritty of this. Just on cursory glance, my same concern that I have with the last one applies to this one, and that is making sure that we make distinctions between population and population equivalents. This version is, I think, as unclear as the last one was in that regard. But I would like some time to look through this some more. My other comment is, we're coming in to a new authority manager, and so, part of me feels like, does it make sense to jump into this, or would it make better sense to wait until an authority manager is here that can be a part of this process from the beginning? So those are my two comments on this.
With regards, Sean, to the comments with be gathering the information, I guess it's subtask 120 with population projections. Mm-hmm. Is there anything specific that would help to get from the engineers regarding your concerns?
Well, I think that in the very first section, it raises a red flag for me. Both master plans, we utilize the same 20-year population projections to identify system deficiencies and develop a capital improvement plan. Population projection will be based on the number of existing residential water and sewer connections. So right there, there's confusion. So you're saying a population is based on hookups, not based on census population or census population projection. So I think it's, again, really important that the engineers separate those things out. And when they're talking about population, that is population projection based on the Portland State University Population Research Center, that's one version of population. And population equivalence, in terms of whether you're talking about two people per household or whether you're talking about the calculation that we have to use with our NPDES permit, I think it's really important to break those two things out and be crystal clear what we're talking about when we're talking about projections.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get that sense from a preliminary reading of this.
Okay, so under the assumptions, we'd like to see some clarification about making sure that that's separate.
Yes.
So that that comparison can be made. That's a good point. Is there anything else in the...
Oh, I'm sure I'll have a lot more once I have time to get into
it. That's fine. Okay. Just, yeah. If you can just gather all your thoughts into an email and send it to me.
Yeah, I've been waiting for the update, so.
So, Tony, one question I had was under subtask 210, under the assumptions, and it said not more than three what-if models will be conducted on the calibrated working model. In your opinion, is that enough for what we need?
Where are you at under 210?
Number five under assumptions, or the fifth dot.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to stress the model.
Okay.
So I don't have any problem with that.
So would it be, the assumption would be one of those three model runs would be if everything is completely developed to the max? I mean.
That is my understanding. If you want that clarified, just let me know.
Is that what was done in the past for the other developments?
Well.
For the other plans?
Yeah.
Not to this degree. Since we don't have a model for the collection system, it's kind of a, here's what we think, you know, is going to happen, but we have no modeling to back up, you know, exactly what's going on. Mm-hmm. So they've got to be able to stress the model in different ways to find out, you know, what the correlation is between growth and the need to upsize the collection system. So.
Well, it's been 15 years since the master plans were originally done, and the computers have come a long way in 15 years. So it should be improved upon just by a matter of time having passed. Okay, so we'll table that until I...
Yeah, let me add one more thing.
Sure.
Just, you sparked a memory I had when I originally looked at this. I would say one thing that I think is really important is the concept of calibration. You know, take a look at what we did in our last master plan and our master plan update and look at the assumptions we made then and compare them to the actuals in the time since those reports have come out, since those plans have come out, and find out if those assumptions we made were accurate. In other words, it wouldn't make any sense to move forward using the same assumptions that were made the last time we did the master plan, if we haven't gone back and checked to make sure that those assumptions track with what the reality that we see. And I think that's something that's really important, that we track that and say, okay, look, we made this assumption 10 years ago. Well, we were way off. So let's revise that.
Or
we were right on. Yeah. But let's make sure that when we're going to make those kinds of if we're going to make those kinds of projections, that we have a sense of whether or not we've been accurate with them in the past.
And see if we can't get better with it over time.
Change.
Yeah.
Good point. Anything else?
Yeah. So you're going to get those issues to Tony, and then he'll take that up to the engineering firm, and then we'll get some answers and maybe move forward in December? Is that...
Ish.
It'd be nice to get started on it, because if it's going to be a year before we actually get them, we know we've got projects that need attention, and it's hard to put a priority on which projects when and start to prepare for that without having the master plans.
Well, we've got a master plan. I mean, so they've got projects in there, and we should be able to use that. And
it would be interesting to see where you projected it and where it is now. That would be key.
I think it's crucial. Yeah.
Okay. Item 6E, public records request.
So I wasn't here at last month's meeting, and Director Jonathan had some things that he wanted to do, discuss, and I put those in your board packets. So
if you remember from, I think it was 2 months ago now, when we originally talked about this, or at least talked about this at length at a public meeting, we went ahead and moved forward with adopting the recommended language from SDAO. Mm-hmm. And there were some concerns that were expressed at the time, you know, by myself, by Cameron, I think, and by Tom Donahue with some of the things. And we agreed to adopt this with the expectation that we would modify it in the future. Mm-hmm. So I spent quite a bit of time going through this and going through public records and information requests in general in the state of Oregon, and just came up with some language to add to that resolution 1906 that I think encompasses what my concerns were, what Tom's concerns were. And so I submitted that to Tony, which you all have in front of you. And it basically, there were two sections that I was concerned about. One, if you remember from the conversation and debate we had 2 months ago, was putting something up front, you mm-hmm. know, about our commitment to stewardship of the public trust. And then number two, I wanted to have something that really tried to strike a balance between honoring our commitment to the public, but yet at the same time understanding that we're a small operation and we have to be cognizant of the fact that these things have a cost associated with them, and in our goal to try to save the district as much money as possible, we have to balance those things. So mm-hmm. I made suggested language to try to address those two things. Mm-hmm.
That's where those lines are.
It's the red.
The red, yeah.
Line through.
It's line through. So yeah. On yours, Cameron, then, if you don't see the red, it would be the very first whereas.
Okay.
The very first that was whereas. An okay. That's an addition. And then the where that strike through is.
Right. In order to.
Yeah.
Adequately balance.
And the rest of that paragraph is basically new
right.
language.
Okay.
And
I did send this to Tom for comment, and he commented back. Let me pull it up, because he asked that I relay his thoughts to you. This is from Tom, that he asked if I would forward this to the board at the public meeting. I think that your transparency comments at the beginning of our new policy was exactly what I had in mind when I brought up my objections at the last PCJWSA meeting. Your further comments reflecting our commitment to transparency and waiving costs are also appropriate. I would appreciate it if you would forward my comments here to the entire board at the PCJWSA meeting.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. Yeah. It's nice to have his comment that way, since he's not here with us. So this would represent an amendment to the to the resolution that we already passed?
Correct. But there's, Sean, you had also forwarded this form, but do you want to discuss this?
We can if you want. Yeah.
Is that part of the resolution?
Well, that's an interesting question.
It's a procedural. It's more of a procedural thing.
Exhibit C, public interest.
It would become part of the resolution.
It would.
Part of the resolution.
Okay.
So then, in addition to that, I forwarded an example of a public interest threshold evaluation form. So a lot of what I spent time on was going through the governor's mm-hmm. website,
yeah.
Which has a lot of really good information in it. Mm-hmm. It is not perfect.
Right.
And if you have been paying attention, there's been a lot of controversy with sort of this kind of stuff at the governor's level. However, I thought that this was information that was would be helpful. So this would get to the point of whether or not we would consider waiving the fees that are associated with doing this kind of work. And so this is essentially a checklist that would, I think, help us as an organization figure out whether or not it would be worth waiving the fees for conducting certain types of public information and public records requests.
So one thing I I failed to ask you about, Sean, is that this shows it's page 1 of 2, but I don't have page 2.
Yeah, and my recollection, I think I have it here, is that the second page wasn't particularly useful, and it was probably, it was the standard fee schedule, is what it
was. So that's part of our initial.
Yeah, and we already have that, yeah. Okay. So the page 2 was essentially outlining what the state's fee schedule is.
Now this part doesn't go as far as paper or newspaper. This is totally separate, because that's a totally different item as far as if the newspaper or any.
No, I think this would, because if you look at private or commercial interest, you know, that kind of, you know, goes with that. So I think we would use this anytime that there was a, I mean, that would be my recommendation, would be to use. And, you know, there's going to have to be some judgment in this. I mean, you know, one of the things that struck me about what the governor's process was is just because a member of the public is interested in it doesn't mean it's in the public interest.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, one member of the community being interested in something doesn't necessarily mean that it's in the public interest. And, you know, some of this stuff is going to maybe have to be a judgment call as to whether or not it actually is in the public interest for this to be waived. But I could not find, and if anybody has a link to it or can get me that information, my reading of the statutes say that a government organization may waive the request or may waive the fees. But I haven't seen anything that says that we're required to waive the fees. So that's just correct. Based on the research that I've done. So
in putting this in front of us now, are you suggesting that this become part of the amendment, or is this for us to look at and consider and maybe consult with staff and develop our own version of this that would be?
Yeah, my recommendation at this point would be to make the changes to Resolution 1906 that I suggested, mm-hmm. and then have this be an ongoing conversation piece. You know, my intent with sending this to Tony was to get feedback from the staff and the community. So
I'm comfortable with that. I'm less comfortable with us making a decision on that as it is right now.
Yeah, I agree. And I may have some things that I want to change on this, but
we can work with the concept and kind of all.
The evaluation form, I think, is a good training tool. It's a good beginning to understand what the policy and the law says. It gets you talking about it, gets you thinking about it in different ways. And I think it's a great tool to start using and then see, you know, how it works out and where the holes are, and we can modify
and
then
develop our own.
It's a guideline. You know, someone's got something to guideline, you know.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good idea. So, are we ready for a motion?
Well, I would make a motion. I don't know what you all think about it, or do you want a motion first, and then we can discuss that?
Good. I
like the language changes you made.
So would this stay Resolution 1906? We're just amending it? All right, well, then I move.
Let's see, what's going to be the cleanest way to do that? I think the cleanest way to do this is to probably repeal 19-06 and have a completely new resolution number. So it's going forward, it's clear that these were separate resolutions.
1906 is no longer 19-whatever.
Gets a copy of it, it's the proper language.
Right.
Yeah. Because otherwise you're trying to figure out whether one's good or one's not.
1906 as amended or
right.
not.
So would you like to do that now, or do you need to come up with a new resolution with a new resolution number before we
I'm going to have a resolution number, but if you want to approve it and as it is and instructing me to come up with the next resolution number, we can do that.
So formally then, do we need to ditch 1906 right now?
In the motion, it needs to be repealed and then noted that this is going to replace it as a separate resolution number.
All right.
And it would, in doing this, it would take effect immediately.
That is correct.
Even though we don't have the number on
that
there.
Is correct.
Okay. Because we don't want a gap in what we
right.
What
yeah.
we have in place.
Yeah, and so. We can do this tomorrow. I'll take care of it and then send a copy to everybody with the resolution number and stuff so
okay.
you have it.
Okay.
All right. Then I move that the Pacific City Joint Water Sanitary Board of Directors repeal Resolution 19-06 in the matter of adopting a public records request policy in accordance with ORS 192.311-192.338 effective September 3rd, 2019, and replace it with a new resolution to be numbered, making the changes that I have recommended.
November 5th.
November 5th, 2019.
Effective November 5th, yeah.
Effective November 5th.
I'll second that.
It has been moved and seconded that the Board of Directors repeal Resolution number 1906 in the matter of adopting a public records request policy in accordance with ORS 192.311 to 192.338, effective September 3rd, 2019. And replace it with a resolution with the edits that we have discussed tonight, and resolution number to be determined in the matter of adopting a public records request policy in accordance within the ORS 192.331 to 192.338, effective November 5th, 2019. All in favor?
Aye.
That was a mouthful.
Thank you. Yes, it was. All right. Okay. Item 6F.
Okay,
excuse
so
me?
Before we move on.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
Were we going to do anything with this?
Start
see,
using it.
As an
as a test vehicle, sort of
template.
This is not a part of the resolution.
Correct. No,
correct.
It is not part of the resolution.
But we'd like you to work with it
and collect the data and see
who the
staff and see if we could modify it for our own purposes.
Okay.
And certainly any feedback as we move forward on it would be appreciated.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cool.
Item 6F, dwelling unit discussion.
On dwelling unit discussions and the sewer connection requirements, legal is still working on those.
Okay.
The realty specialist who's reviewing these items for us has not completed their review.
Okay.
Do we have an actual sewer hookup request in at this point?
This is the dwelling unit.
It's a dwelling unit,
multiple
not the sewer.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. The dwelling unit. Do we have anything, an actual... No, so this is just revising language moving forward.
Well, the dwelling unit discussion is specifically for a person that is proposing to build a guest house on their property.
Oh, yeah.
Right. But we don't have anything pending that we had the one that we talked about 2 months ago.
Right.
And that's it.
And that's all that
it's,
I'm aware of.
It's
at this
not.
Point in time.
And so
it hasn't
this,
moved to the next stage, right? Yeah, right.
Yeah, they haven't applied for a building permit or anything like that.
Okay.
So
it just raised the issue again.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, Ann, were you able to go through? Because didn't you guys have a discussion a couple of boards ago about the same issue? I think I remember when we were talking about that. Of that you guys did some research work on that.
Several
that,
years ago,
right,
we had a
yeah,
committee.
Right, a committee. Right. And did you review any of that?
Well, at that time, guest house was not even part of the conversation.
Yeah.
Because there, at that point in time, there was no such thing happening that we were aware of.
Mm-hmm.
But it is happening now, and I can guarantee you it's going to continue to happen.
Oh, sure is.
So...
Well, and it's likely from the housing summit that I attended last week at the county level that it's very likely that the whole concept of ADUs is going to come back.
Mm-hmm. sure.
Which has gone through the state level, wasn't it? Requiring that ADUs be allowed in any residential zone. And the county is probably going to be looking at that issue again. But years ago when we discussed these things, ADUs were a proposal, which don't ask me to go back and and recreate the whole conversation, but there were several concerns about them. And in the discussions from last week's Housing Summit, the ADU concept that was being discussed would expressly prohibit those from being short-term vacation rentals, which was one of the big concerns years ago.
Right.
So that's, so it, I mean, it's a flowing issue.
So do we have to wait, do we have to wait and have the county and the housing make a decision of where we go, or as?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not suggesting that, but we are likely to see more of those kinds of
requests coming in,
and so we want to get clarity on what we can do again.
Yeah.
If you look at the history of the board in 98, there was a very clear line drawn in terms of what was allowed and what was not allowed. And then I think a few years later, as I've talked to Tony about it, it seems like the board wanted to make an exception and open it up to make sure that they didn't exclude the dory boater or the construction guy that wanted to build a shop and put a shower and a sink in it and a toilet in it and use it that way. And that seemed to be the usage at that point. Well, now those usages, because times have changed, have flipped over, and yet we're requiring some people that build duplexes outright to pay SDCs, and we're not requiring these people. So if we want to protect that class, is there a way to reverse engineer it and protect them without getting ourselves in a position where we are ignoring people that convert without coming to us and applying through the process? And I think that's what we want to get at, but we don't want to go there for a full discussion until we have all the legal homework done and have it in front of us where we can discuss it.
So this is pending.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And as soon as I get information from council, I will forward it to all of you.
Thank you.
All right. Item 6G, sewer connection requirement.
I kind of mentioned that in the previous one. It's the same thing. Council is still working
pending.
On it.
That's the one out on Woods.
On Woods Road, yeah.
But we do that one. We do actually have somebody who's got an application in, correct, or not?
They are asking. They can't put an application in until it's determined what the legalities of this are. But they want, they don't, they're asking if they can put a septic system in there. We're looking at the issue of sewer is required.
Right.
Or is not required.
Within our boundary.
Right.
Yeah.
But our ordinance does say that it's within 300 feet of the house. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's what we're looking for legal to do some interpretation for us. Because that does not follow DEQ rules at all.
Yeah.
As you're aware.
Okay. All right, then. Item 7, guest questions and comments.
Are we speaking up enough for you?
You are.
Okay.
Yeah.
For your neighbor there.
I can hear you real well, but this young man here always has his hands on his face.
When I'm talking?
I'm deaf. And if I can't read your lips, I don't know what you're saying.
Gotcha. Thank you.
All right. Yes, Mike Gill.
I brought a black and white puck. For Cameron.
Thanks.
But we sent you the newsletter. Had a couple questions off of that first page of it. We don't know what the elevation is for where the water intake is. And so we'd like to have it. This was the map that I had made from Wendy from Tillamook, that, you know, when we had our town council meeting a while ago. And so it's got all the lots on it. It's got what they're all worth, everything like that. So there's a lot of data behind it, but it also shows elevation all the way around our system. It doesn't show Horn Creek, though. It doesn't show that intake. So I'd like to get the elevation of where we tap water from. And there was another question on here. Steve Delaney told me that we run the water up to the top of PC Heights with 215-horsepower motors. Is this correct?
No.
What are the horsepower?
They're 60-horse motors.
60-horsepower. There's two of them?
Yep.
Okay, 260. Okay, thank you. And then, so we'll change that. And you guys are, I applaud you for simulation and modeling. I think that's a great way forward. This is what I've been trying to say. I think that I've given you six suggestions on the front page that are all into your web page and into that very, very question of modeling, is how can you put down multiple simulations on the same area. It also helps you to model your environment, your network, where all the pipes are, when they've been put in, when they're scheduled for release. So it also allows you to model your whole workflow. And as far as your data, I would like, there's a lot of data that you still have within your consumption data in your system for all these systems, and you can actually do modeling now over the data that you've had for as long as you have it. I tried to do some queries into the longevity of data, and you guys have lost data over time over your system as you changed out computer systems and stuff like that, and so you can't really do very much simulation all the way back to 1979 or something like that, but you do have it to the past. As far back as you can go into the past, you can model your system. You can start to model who uses consumption, who doesn't use consumption, and where that consumption is falling from. I've also brought a taste test.
Mr. Dill, your time has been expired. Can you wrap that up in a few seconds?
Okay.
I please give him my 3 minutes?
That's not the way that works here, but thank you.
Okay, but anyway, I have a water test. If anybody wants to do a taste between well water, and I took the cold water from the library. So
thank you.
It's here and it's available to you.
Thank you.
Chair, excuse me for a minute.
Yes.
Need to excuse myself.
Yes.
Should I wait for him to come back?
You're welcome to, or you can go right ahead.
Okay, I'll go ahead because I don't think he can answer the question. When you repair a leak, do you go back to make sure the problem is taken care of? And the reason why I'm asking this, because there was a repair on Elderberry Road on PC Heights, and it appeared nobody came back because the water adjacent to where they repaired the leak, it was bubbling over. So I called Michelle, and somebody came back. And so I'm wondering if that is something you do.
I'm not exactly following your question.
Okay.
Do we go
yes.
back to where we did a repair
exactly.
and check
yes.
it?
Yes.
We check it when we do the repair and have full system pressure back to that and get it flushed out so there's no air. If there is a leak that happens afterwards, this kind of thing normally happens, or if we're driving by, we will see it. So it kind of depends on what the scenario is.
Okay. And then the other thing is I learned recently from a neighbor who lives on Upper Loop, which is one street from where I live, that PCJWSA had a leak that was causing the road at the end of the street to cave in. So this had been going on for actually a number of years. In fact, my neighbor was so territorial, he was putting rocks, you know, because his driveway had an easement. so people.
Oh, those were those rocks in the. Pothole and they had big giant
exactly.
rocks.
Exactly, like, and they're gone now. They're gone. But anyway, so I wanted to know because this has been going on for quite a few years.
We haven't had a leak up there.
How do you know when there is a leak in your distribution system? And where it's located, do you have a way of knowing that?
It depends on the size of pipe and the degree. We look at if we're making a lot of water when we know we shouldn't be, we go through the distribution system and check for leaks. Or a customer will call us and say, hey, you have a leak. So those are the two primary ways that we do it.
So are you
But this was not a leak. The area in question has been a drainage area for surface water for years and years and years. That was not our leak up there where that water is.
Okay,
it drains right off of that hill and right across into that catch basin on the west side of the road.
I know the other thing that they did too was the fire hydrants. They had to move the fire hydrant because I guess there was a problem with the water, I guess, when they're flushing the lines or whatever.
When you say they moved the fire hydrant, who would?
You moved the fire. According to my
neighbor. On Upper Loop?
On Upper, no, it was up on the top of, I think it was on Riverview Drive, I believe.
Well,
the fire hydrant.
Riverview Drive is where you live.
Right, exactly. And I think the neighbor said it was on up, you know, going east from Upper Loop. So you're saying that's not right.
I don't know what they're referring to. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Good to check these things out.
Okay. Well, that's why I'm asking.
Okay.
This is why you need a map.
All right. Any other questions? All righty. Thank you. Then we will, at 6:06, adjourn into
We're going to recess.
Do we do chair and director comments first?
It's on the list.
Well, the executive session isn't there, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Please, comments.
I have one. I just.
Okay.
Well, my neighbor had a little bump in the his little digging for a fence. That's why you dial 811. Called me, says I got an emergency, and he was really freaked out. I said, you're doing the right thing. And he was really thoroughly impressed with how everybody responded and cleaned it up and stuff. And that he was worried it was going to be $1,000 bill. So, yeah, quite happy. So
that was a contractor's responsibility.
Yeah, it was. And they thought that was marked. It was marked, but it was marked for the cable. They're supposed to be renting some cable lines, guide cables. And they were going by that, but they didn't. So, yes.
Kudos to the staff, though, for taking
yeah,
care of that.
Yeah, he wanted me to convey that, so, yes.
Thank you.
Should have stuck him for $1,000. No, just kidding.
All right. Any other comments? All right, then we will recess for executive session at 6:07 under OSR 192.6602A. While the governing body of a public body may hold an executive session to consider the employment of a public officer, employee, staff member, or individual agent. Thank you all for coming. It's 6:28. We are back in general session, and I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you all.